Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks, we'll get a better sound. Good afternoon, everybody. that's much better. Right. Thank you for delaying your evening meal in order to come and hear Joy Carol. Like me, you may have seen just her hands this morning. I could see not much more. Joy was one of the first women to be ordained into the priesthood of the Church of England. She grew up in the south of London and was a primary school teacher before receiving a calling to the ministry in the church. Joy was a spokesperson for the ordination of women and served on the Church of England's General Synod, as well as being the advisor to the popular comedy TV series The Vicar of Dibley. After 10 years of inner city ministry, she moved to live and work in an urban neighbourhood of Washington, D.C., where she now lives with her husband Jim Wallace and their son Luke. This afternoon, her topic is A Woman's Place in the House of Bishops. And the notes in the programme say it's time to finish what we started and consecrate women as bishops in the C of E. But how to navigate such tricky waters, and where will we end up? Joy's been working under the authority of a woman bishop in Washington, D.C., and this seminar will include an opportunity for you to discuss issues and be involved in discussing this important matter. So please welcome Joy.
Thank you. Just to say a couple of things to begin with. First of all, there is only actually a limited amount one can say about this topic. And I'm really glad to see you all here and see that there's an interest in it. But at the end, when I finished speaking, what I'd really like to do is for us to have a discussion. And I'd love to hear what some of your responses are to what I say and to hear how you feel about this whole issue, and so that we can have some interaction and discussion between us. Question and answers always feel to me like you have the questions and I have the answers, and that certainly isn't the case here. So please, you know, do feel free to interact with me on this one, and I'm sure that some of you out here may know things that I don't know about this too. So let's sort of get that clear to start with. And the second thing I wanted to say just before we begin is that I have no ambitions to be a bishop. People keep asking me, and people I think are a bit concerned that, you know, when women talk about this subject, that it can be seen as, you know, women pushing themselves forward and, you know, being ambitious and wanting to be bishops themselves. When the truth is, of course, that a lot of the women who are being vocal in this debate are women who are close to retirement and actually have no chance of being a bishop anyway. And so the younger women are staying quiet because they don't, you know, I think partly because they're afraid of being seen to be ambitious and pushing themselves forward in that way. Well, to begin with, my position is that I think women should be in the House of Bishops. I think it's a logical next step, that if women have been allowed by the Church of England to be ordained as priests, then there really is no logical reason why they should not be bishops. And most of the arguments against the consecration of women as bishops are the same ones as those arguments that were put forward against the ordination of women as priests. And some of you might disagree with that, and we can have a discussion around that as well. I think there's one area of difference, and I think that difference is that bishops, one of the roles of a bishop is to be the focus of unity for the church. And many people say, well, how can a woman be a focus of unity when her very presence in the church is causing such division and causing a schism amongst us? And my response to that briefly, and again we can discuss it more later, is, well, of course, I feel that it's not the women who are causing the division and the schism. It's those who are opposed to their presence and those who are unwilling to allow the Spirit to move the church in this new direction. So, you know, to put it coarsely, it's the bully boys who are blaming the women for what they can't cope with. Let me give you some background of where we are on this subject. 2 years ago was when the issue was first raised in the Church of England General Synod. Judith Rose, who is an archdeacon in the Church of England, the Archdeacon of Tunbridge, raised a motion on the table for the House of Bishops to initiate further theological study on the issues to be addressed in preparation for the debate on women in the episcopate and to make a report to the General Synod in 2 years. And so this working... And again, Judith Rose is one of those women who is about to retire, and so it was in a way very appropriate for her to be the one to say, OK, now is the time to begin this discussion. And so a working party was set up, which was chaired by Bishop Michael Nazar Ali of Rochester. And they have just reported back this last July in the year 2002. But actually, they didn't actually get their act together in terms of starting to meet together until April 2001. So the working party has met 6 times, and they've had a residential meeting to discuss various issues. And they brought back their progress report to General Synod this past July, which revealed that not very much has been done at all. What they have done is to basically identify what some of the problem... Well, let's see. They had three tasks assigned to them: to examine the theology of the episcopate, secondly, to ask if it's right to have women priests, and thirdly, to address issues of communion and the impairment of communion of the church if it was to ordain women to the episcopate. And basically, they're still on number one. They're still examining the theology of the episcopate, which has actually been done before. And I remember discussing a report that was written for the General Synod to discuss on the episcopate when I was a member of the General Synod from the years 1990 to 1995. And so it's a bit discouraging, really, that things are happening so slowly. What they have to do is to come up with ways to address the profound and deeply held differences that exist in the Church of England on this issue. And that seems to be what they're concentrating on at the moment. And they're talking together because it's a very well-balanced working party that includes people who are not happy about it as well as those who are in favour of it. And they're spending a lot of time talking together about those differences. And Christina Baxter, who's a laywoman who's on that working party, has said that there's been plenty of frank talking in the working party, and that at the residential, members, and she says, have gone through new pain barriers on understanding their differences. So they really have been kind of engaging with one another and really attempting to understand where one another are coming from with regards to this issue. And so for those of us who feel fairly sure about where we're going on this one, it's very frustrating. But it's a process that needs to happen. People need to listen to one another and need to understand one another. But it's frustrating because we feel like we've done a lot of that around the whole, over the last 10 years, as we progress towards the ordination of women. One of the things that came up in the discussion around this reporting back to General Synod in July was a concern from women that we learn from the Act of Synod. Now, the Act of Synod was put into place after the Church agreed to ordain women as priests. And this was an act that provided for those who were opposed to the ordination of women, and it provided them with their own bishops, fondly known as flying bishops, but really they're provincial episcopal visitors, one for the northern province of York and one for Canterbury. And these two bishops will move around the country and care for parishes and clergy who are unhappy to be cared for by a bishop who has ordained a woman. So it's not even just that they would be unhappy having a woman bishop. They don't want a male bishop if he has had anything to do with ordaining a woman, because that, in essence, will have tainted him in as much as he has broken away from the traditional apostolic faith. Which is the traditional Catholic understanding of apostolic succession, where down through the centuries, from the early church, the presbyters and leaders of the church have laid hands successively on the new priests down through the centuries up until this present day. And for a bishop to ordain a woman priest has broken with that tradition in terms of their understanding of it being pure and correct. And so they wanted their own bishops. And at the time, many of the women who were on General Synod, there were 25 of us women on General Synod, who were clergy. And we all felt pretty torn about this act of Synod. Many of the women decided that they were going to be gracious. And I remember listening to a wonderful... She was a very mature, wise woman priest on General Synod, and we had a meeting of us women together, and she said, "Well, we've got what we want. You know, we're going to be ordained as priests. Let's let them have their bishops. You know, let's be gracious about this." And that was the general feeling that was around, that we wanted to not make any more fuss, you know, let's just... And one part of me agreed with that, you know. I wanted to be gracious, I wanted to be tolerant, I wanted to kind of, in some way, be able to embrace this thing that they called the two integrities. Somehow we were both right, you know, and we could all live together and it would be okay. But there was another part of me that struggled with that and said, this doesn't feel like theological integrity. It feels like we are, you know, bending over so far backwards that we're actually compromising what is right. And so I was very much in the minority in speaking against the Act of Synod. Even amongst those people who, you know, were in favour of women priests, there were very few who actually decided that they were going to speak against or vote against the Act of Synod. And I was one of them, and it was very difficult to do that because it made me feel like I was being unreasonable or unfair or ungracious. But it felt like an issue of integrity to me. And it felt like bad going along with and endorsing bad theology, and a theology that just didn't make any sense. And so I spoke against it. But the Act of Synod was passed, and the people who are opposed to the ordination of women have their bishops, and there are all kinds of opt-out things. You know, parishes who don't want a woman vicar can sign a document that says they don't have to have one. And when people left the Church of England, they were compensated financially for any loss of money that they would incur for the rest of their ministry. And so in debating women bishops, the women are now saying, interestingly, we made a mistake. We were wrong to be gracious. And many people in Watch Women, and there's another group, I think, that's called GRASS, the group for the repeal of the Act of Synod, who are really working very hard to turn that clock back and, you know, to repeal that and to change things. And because it has caused a lot of damage in the church, more harm than good. And so they're saying now, please don't, when you come to drawing up the legislation for women bishops, please don't have any conscience provisions. You know, let's have this clear cut, a single clause motion that says there's no reason why women can't be bishops, and everybody has to live with it, you know, or deal with it in whatever way they see fit. But I really think that we have to stop being, you know, I don't know what causes it really, but it's kindness, I suppose, but it's not a very constructive, productive, or in the end loving kindness, because it causes a lot of pain and a lot of damage in the church. And also, I don't think it would be tolerable for bishops to have that kind of opt-out provision. Bishops are, in fact, indeed a focus of unity, and it can't be possible to have bishops whose orders are recognised by some but not others. And so I think that has to be a very clear difference when we come to the next stage of this legislation. Now, as far as the arguments for and against women as bishops, this working party has done a lot of work on studying the scriptures. This is what I think they have spent most of their first few meetings in doing. And one of the people who wrote a report of the Synod's meeting in July, when they heard this, the feedback from their meeting, said, "I've observed a general synod on many occasions, but have never seen so much reference to scripture in the synod's proceedings." And the working party generally recognised that the current threefold pattern of ministry emerged from Christ's requirements for his church. And whilst the specific orders of bishop, presbyter and deacon were not clearly defined in the New Testament era, they accepted that there was clear evidence of women leaders of the early house churches mentioned in the New Testament. And the working party had also considered the work of Richard Borkum on Junior the Apostle. But it became clear that no matter how commendable this biblical study might be, it was also a means for delay. And this is one of the main criticisms of the working party and those, the kind of politicians of our church, that there really is a kind of delaying tactic going on. It is inevitable. People know that women are going to be consecrated bishops, and those who are opposed are already setting up, making plans. They've got a Forward in Faith have its own committee, which is shadowing the Synod's working party. Forward in Faith is the group of clergy who are opposed to the ordination of women to the priesthood, and of course to being bishops. And so they've got their own working party working alongside the Synod's one to develop plans for a parallel church for those who refuse to accept the authority of women bishops. And that's in place. So they know it's going to happen. They're preparing and planning for it. But what's happening is there's, you know, a lot of delaying going on, and maybe so that, you know, as few people as possible who are in the church right now will be affected by it. Let me give you some time frame issues. The report stated that the working party will aim to complete its work before the current General Synod comes to an end, and that's in 2005. But this working party isn't going to be producing any legislation that can then be voted on. It's simply a working party tackling theological issues, and all it's going to do is recommend a list of possible ways forward. Maybe four or five options, which could range from no change to a single clause measure and a few things in between. So there's definitely not going to be any more progress for this synod. Nothing's going to come out of this synod. It will be for the newly elected synod in 2005 to take this forward and to propose any real legislation that can be discussed and debated and then sent back to the diocese for discussion and then to come back to the synod. And so the earliest possible date, even now, is probably 2010, before women can be consecrated as bishops in the Church of England. They do say the Church of England works slowly, and this is the Church of England at its finest. Some of the arguments let me just touch on a couple. Some of the things that people are concerned about, as they were with the ordination of women to priesthood, is the question of unity, the unity with Rome question. But it's interesting to note that the Church of England is already in full communion through the Porvoo Declaration with the Scandinavian churches. See, this is all fresh in my memory because this was all the stuff we debated when I was on synod back between 90 and 95. And they have women bishops, and we're in full communion with them. And so that would be an issue for unity with Rome already. So us having women bishops really isn't going to make any more difference. And basically, I'm not going to re-rehearse all of the arguments that you already know, probably, because most of them are the same. Why women, you know, the reasons why that people argue women can't be bishops the same as the ones that say that people couldn't be priests. So, and they're being re-rehearsed all over again, so it's very tiring. And this is why I think partly people, don't want to say anything about it, don't want to speak about it, and are tired of campaigning for it. And that's why it's so easy to make it take so long, and for the church to delay it. Let me give you some information about what's happening in other places in the world, in terms of women priests and the Anglican Communion. The thing that's most fresh in your memories is the Scottish Episcopal Church, who have just recently voted overwhelmingly in favour of a proposal to amend canon law so that all references to gender are removed from the criteria for the selection of bishops. Now, that's really specific, and that's to do with legislation, and that means that pretty soon the Scottish Episcopal Church will be able to consecrate a woman bishop. It's got to be referred back to the seven Scottish dioceses for approval, and then it's got to return for a second reading at next year's General Synod, which will undoubtedly pass because it was so overwhelming. The Scottish Church wants to do this. And then it means that the first opportunity for the Scottish Church to have a woman bishop will be 2004, which is when the Bishop of Argyll and the Isles retires. No pressure, of course, to ordinate to pick a woman, but yeah, that's the first date on which it might be possible in the Scottish Episcopal Church. At present, we have women bishops in America, in Canada, Polynesia, New Zealand. The Church of Ireland has voted in favour, but have yet to appoint a woman bishop. And Australia has said that, in principle, yes to women bishops, but haven't got to drawing up the actuality yet. And so we're on a journey, and some people have got to the destination before we have, and we can learn lessons from those people who are on that journey. But I think we're getting there too. And there are questions, there are biblical questions, there are theological questions, there are traditional questions, and there are church unity questions. And they all need to be kind of churned up and thrown through the mill all over again. Now, one of the things that I wanted to share with you was that, I think I've covered everything there that I wanted to say. I've been in an unusual position over the last few years, because even though I've been out of the scene here and haven't been able to be a part of the debate in the Church of England, I have been licensed by the Bishop of Washington, D.C., and have been working in that diocese and in the churches there, where the associate bishop is a woman. And so I've been working under the authority of Bishop Jane Dixon, which has been wonderful. And she's been a wonderful example of a good woman bishop. She doesn't function, though, without opposition. And even in the Episcopal Church, where they ordained women to the priesthood way back in 1976 and didn't make any conditions and women were allowed to be bishops right from the word go, there are those of the Forward in Faith movement who are not happy with that situation. And in the last couple of years, there's been a situation that has been very painful for Bishop Dixon to deal with. In Accokeek, Maryland, which is the name of the town, one church appointed a Forward in Faith clergyman to be their rector. Now, this guy was opposed to women priests and refused to accept the authority of Bishop Jane Dixon. And this really became an issue when the diocesan bishop retired and Jane Dixon took over as the only authority in the whole diocese before the new bishop was appointed. And he refused to accept her authority. He also made statements in public that were blatantly hostile to the Episcopal Church, referring to it, well, and would apply to the Anglican, the Church of England too, referring to it as hellbound and the unchurch. And so he was very much distancing himself from the whole communion. So in March 2001, Bishop Dixon refused to give approval for the PCC of that church to appoint this man as a rector. And her reason was that he would not guarantee her that he would obey the canons and his ordination vows, which require submission to the authority of the bishop. The PCC, however, decided to proceed with moving the clergyman and his family into the rectory. It was legal for him to stay 2 months without Bishop Dixon's approval, and at the end of 2 months, when the clergyman still refused to go, and she gave him every opportunity to give him the guarantees that she required, his presence at the church became illegal in terms of the canons of the church. And on the first Sunday that he presided illegally, Bishop Dixon went to the church herself to conduct the services. So she, in essence, went there and said, you have no authority as far as I'm concerned in this church. And she asserted her authority and went in to take over. And he would not leave and he wouldn't go. So there was this kind of standoff situation. And the illegal clergyman presided over a service inside the church building and Bishop Dixon presided over a service outside. And, of course, this drew a fair amount of press interest, media attention, and it was also true that the congregation itself was divided. It wasn't a matter of the whole church was in there with him and there was no one outside with her. It was truly divided and half the church were inside and half the church were outside. And Bishop Dixon, after careful deliberation and a lot of agonising, brought a civil suit asking the court to prohibit the clergyman from officiating in the church and occupying or using the property. She also asked the court to prohibit the PCC from barring her to ministering to the congregation and performing episcopal acts there. So for some time, the priest continued to function illegally while the majority of the congregation worshipped in a nearby community centre with another priest that the bishop had approved and sent down to take pastoral care of the situation. I wouldn't want that job, would you? And the federal judge ruled in favour of Bishop Dixon, and the church PCC are currently appealing against the ruling to the Superior Court. But throughout the whole affair, Bishop Dixon has been kind but firm, gracious but still determined. She's been strong and dignified and an articulate leader, standing firm against those who had no regard for her authority. I think the final outcome is yet to be known, but it's very likely that it will be settled in favour of the bishop and the canons of the church. But it is such a shame that it goes to that level where people are going to court, bishops and congregations are going to court to fight one another over this issue. And so it's not whichever way, you know, whichever way we deal with those who are opposed to the ordination of women after the event, it isn't going to solve the conflict. Because in the States, they don't have the provisions and the flying bishops and everything. But then you still then get these painful situations and these painful schisms that occur. So that's my experience, and that's my, you know, my pitch, if you like. I've kind of given you my tuppence worth on the subject. And as I say, there's, you know, in terms of information, I'm not sure there's much more that I can give you, but I know that there must be a lot of feelings and responses out there that need to be fed back. And so what I wanted to do was ask you a couple of questions. I want to ask, and you can either just think about this yourself, or you can just turn into little buzz groups if you don't mind doing that, and discuss with the people around you. My first question is, do you think that this, that women bishops issue is more important or less important than the women priests issue was? You know, are we wasting our time even talking about it, you know? And the other question is, what I wanted to ask, you know, what does the idea of a pregnant bishop do for you? But then I thought, no, that's not very likely, because, you know, they're too young, really, to be bishops if they're pregnant. So I thought, well, okay, what does the idea of a bishop with, like, three kids running around after her saying, Mommy, do for you? And, you know, what I really want to do is kind of get in touch with your feelings about this. Just to finish on one final point before we get into a deluge of questions and arguments, one of the issues that was raised in the General Synod when this was being debated was from one woman who said, this is a human rights issue. You know, forget all the theology, this is a justice issue. You know, it's like, it's discrimination, like you would discriminate against black people. And you know, it was completely dismissed. People are not, you know, in terms of this debate in the synod, that doesn't hold, people aren't interested in hearing that. And I know that maybe a lot of you feel that, and I feel that, but, you know, it's really not where, you know, if I was on synod, I wouldn't even waste my breath bringing that up, to be honest, because it doesn't wash. The issues, as far as church people are concerned, are the theological issues of scripture, tradition, blah-de-blah-de-blah. And so just to throw that out for your interest or information, that the kind of human rights issue is kind of, they're kind of, yeah. You know, people aren't interested in that. Anyway, if you can remember those two questions about, you know, how does it make you feel to see a woman and all that that entails, maybe with kids or whatever, being a bishop, and do you think it's more or less important than the issue of women priests? Well, let's just take a couple of minutes to talk about that. Those are just trigger questions. If you've got other issues, you know, go with them.
Thank you.
If you've had enough time, we could perhaps begin to finish off sentences and things. Okay, for the sake of the recording, if you'd like to feed something back from your group or ask a question or express an opinion, it would be good if you could come to the mic. We've got one here. And is this one on as well? Right, I'll bring this down for this side. Is there anybody who's brave enough to... Okay, thanks.
I think it is a shame resorting to the court system. Mm-hmm. But would you support a sufficiently mature and experienced woman priest in this country pursuing a discrimination case in court?
I'm not sure of the legalities of the situation in this country because, of course, the Episcopal Church is set up very differently and to the Church of England. And so I'm kind of hypothetically answering that question because I'm not sure it would ever come to that because it would be dealt with within the Church, you know, the legal organ of our Church of England. And I don't think it would ever go to, an outside court. So I think it's a hypothetical situation, but I certainly supported Bishop Dixon in her suit. Yeah. Okay, I'll repeat it. Right.
Whether they think that women can become bishops at this time in history.
That's very interesting. This lady was saying that there could really be an issue. The issue could be taken up in Europe through the European law courts as other countries begin to comment on what's happening in this country and begin to take issue with the human rights, with it as a human rights issue in the way we treat women in the church over here.
Hi, I'd like to say a couple of things. First of all, people often say that the Roman Catholic Church would be split off further from the Anglican Church if women became bishops. But as a Catholic as somebody who was brought up as a Catholic and who has many friends who are practicing Catholics, I think there are a lot of people in the Catholic Church who would think it would be a wonderful thing if there were bishops, women bishops in the Anglican Church. And another thing is that I've noticed that the attitudes to women priests seems to have changed quite a lot from when they first were introduced, because people were very worried that they'd get lots of very angry feminist women in the churches. And actually they found that at the moment, in some theological colleges, more than half of the ordinands, people who are going to be vicars, are going to be women. And the Anglican Church is going to be full of women who are doing a wonderful job. And it seems a terrible shame that these ordinary, hard-working, very good people can't go on to be bishops.
Thank you. Okay, there's several hands over the back here, and one, two, three. Why don't you come and line up at the mic? Oh, and there's some down here too. Yeah, why don't we take a line on both sides and take one at a time? We'll alternate.
I just when you said that it would be seen if women were asking to, you know, that it would be women being seen to wanting to progress themselves if they're becoming bishops, and I think that's really a very sad thing. I mean, that's what men have been doing for years anyway, but that's beside the point. The thing is, though, who are the male allies? Where are your allies within the Church of England? Because if it's been going to be seen that women are just doing it to agitate for their own furtherance, then you need to be finding your male allies to take that forward.
Yeah, I agree.
I serve as a consultant to a working party in another church within the Anglican Communion. I'm sure none of you can guess where it is. It's dealing with probably the most controversial issue in our society, sectarianism, and dealing with other forms of difference. And consulting to that working party has given me an insight, it's led to a question, and that is, to what degree is the difficulty we're talking about now to do with simple bureaucracy? Because what I see with the working party I work with is an enormous amount of goodwill, a little bit of conservative theology and unwillingness to change among some people, and a lack of strategy and an inability to deal with a centuries-old bureaucracy that cannot get things done. So in terms of women bishops, you have some conservative theology, you have some sexism, I think you have a lot of goodwill and a horrible bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. And so are we not needing to widen, not necessarily this discussion today, but is the issue not bureaucracy in the Anglican Communion, rather than this one theological issue, which it just seems to me it is inevitable, it's going to change. It could change tomorrow. It will change in 2010, hopefully before. But can something not be done about the bureaucracy?
And people are taking advantage of that bureaucracy at the moment.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Well, I think what's happening is, I don't want to use a pejorative term, but hardliners, if you want to use that phrase, probably recognise the inevitability of change, but they're trying to hold on as long as they can to prevent it from happening, because maybe they'll die before it happens. So.
Thanks.
I too was a Catholic to start with, and I entirely endorse what the last but one lady was saying about Catholics wanting women priests and women bishops in the Anglican Church, partly because it might kick the Roman Church into action in order to get some there. But what I was going to say, two things. The first is that while there are still Anglican priests who do not believe in transubstantiation, there will not be communion with Rome. That is a basic stumbling block which will have to be overcome before you get communion. Therefore, whether or not we have women bishops is irrelevant as far as communion is concerned. The other thing I was going to say is that the consecration of women as bishops will surely necessitate the abolition of the measure for flying bishops.
Yes, I think it probably will, and that will be an interesting juggling act that they'll have to do legally. I think also, just to respond to that briefly, is that even greater obstacle for unity with Rome is the issue of authority, you know, papal authority.
Mention has been made of the negative ecumenical effects of appointing bishops, but speaking from a tradition which struggles with the concept of bishops, not having women bishops makes that an even more difficult thing to struggle with. So, you know, there is an ecumenical negative effect of not having women bishops, and that seems to be forgotten.
Right, again, on a similar theme with unity, I'm a simple-minded Methodist, and we've been sort of having this sort of debate with the Anglican Church on unity and come up with this Anglican-Methodist covenant. In it, I know Methodist Conference has fully endorsed this, and I believe Synod has... I know it's sent it to the diocese, and I think it's on its way back. In it, it fully acknowledges one another's ordination, totally, utterly, without question. My father's a Methodist minister, used to be in the ecumenical parish of Wirral, Methodist Anglican. When it came to confirmation time, the bishop had to come in to do the Anglican part of the confirmation, but the Methodist ordination already has it at that level. And the Methodist Church has people like Christina, who's president at the moment. I think closest equivalent would be Archbishop of Canterbury. By acknowledging these ordinations fully, wouldn't Synod already have said, yes, we have acknowledged full ordination of women to any level, even if it's a backdoor route? Unless they're sort of saying, yes, we're acknowledging the full ordination, except we forgot to mention. But the Methodist Church has basically said, without any member of the church with the full calling and full ability to take any post within the structure, unity won't happen.
Right. That's interesting. I don't know that I can answer that with any accuracy, because very often the agreements, you know, being in communion with one another, is more full from one side than it is from the other. So, you know, do you know what I mean? So, you know, like, there's an arrogance about the Anglican Church that sort of says, well, you know, we want to be in full communion with you. But they don't push it to those logical conclusions, because they can't, actually, in terms of church order. Because, no, they can't, you know, recognise that you have the equivalent of a bishop, because, you know, it doesn't fit with the Anglican Church order. So, yeah, but I'm not an ecumenical expert, so I'm afraid I'm kind of fishing around in the dark here. Yes, help me.
So sorry about this, but this is the opportunity, if you feel strongly about that contribution, to write a letter to your bishop, if you are part of the Anglican Communion, to ask what is his, and I can say that, you know, his view on this. And, you know, you're looking for some help, you heard this question, you know, what's the view? It'd be great.
Just to repeat that for the benefit of the day, why not write to your bishop and ask him that question? You know, you've heard this question, what does he say the answer is?
Can I just say, Joy used to be our vicar in Streatham, and she'd make a damn fine bishop if she was dragged back over here. Sorry, Joy. I did have a question. In your opinion, is this a theological issue, or is it more a traditional, people see the Church of England they've known and loved evaporating before their eyes, and the theological issue is sort of dressing to provide a rear guard action against further change?
I think it's both. And I think there are sincerely held convictions on many sides. You know, there are people who, for whom it really is a theological issue, and they would go to their deathbed saying, it's not personal. You know, I'm not against you as a woman. I'm just so convinced that it's a theological issue of, church tradition and church order that cannot be changed. And, I learned to respect that from my colleagues in Southwark Diocese. There was one guy that I worked with as we were preparing for the ordination of women to the priesthood and moved around the diocese to doing educational seminars and workshops, if you like, on the whole, presenting the issues in favour and against. And there was me talking about the arguments in favour, and there was another Anglo-Catholic priest who was speaking, telling the arguments against. We actually found that after doing 32 of those meetings in 1 year, in the run-up to the ordination debate, that we became good friends and really found that we began to understand each other. And so I didn't agree with each other, of course, but I felt like I understood that he had a position of integrity that wasn't, misogynist. It was a theological issue for him. Now, for others, that's true on the kind of conservative evangelical side too, people who, sincerely, hold certain positions, however wrong I think they are, or however wrongly I think scripture is interpreted, it's, passionately and sincerely held views that need to be respected at one level. But there are also those who for whom it's just a gut feeling that they, and it's just a kind of prejudice and an uncomfortableness and not wanting change and, not sure that women can do that sort of thing. And of course, in some cases, I think it's a mixture of all three or more things. It's very complex. We got 2 minutes, so.
My comment's very similar to the previous speaker on this side about the Methodist and Anglican Communion covenant proposal. Its agreement is complete on everything. There's only two things: that's lay presidency of the Eucharist and the tradition of women and authority, which the Methodists have them at the top, and we Anglicans don't. And the Anglican Church over the years has gone into full communion with, for example, the Lutheran Church and many other churches in Europe. And there is a longing for union with the Roman Church, but that's not going to happen in the near future. So I think we should go forward steadily and seize this chance of union with the Methodist Church.
Thank you very much.
I was just wondering, why not a pregnant bishop if women are having babies later, generally? In other professions, I know they have to juggle things around.
Well, yeah, I mean, the new Archbishop of Canterbury has got a 7-year-old son, so I guess it's possible.
I'd like to know why we think that unity is such an issue. Because to me, I have friends who are women who are in ordination training, and I have a friend who's a man who says that a male friend of his will not shake his hand now because he has allowed a woman to preside in his church. And I don't have any unity with those people. I don't feel that kind of unity. And I want to know when we're going to have the courage to say, that is sexist, that is bigotry, and I don't have any truck with it.
Thank you.
I'm a member of the United Reformed Church, and in the summer this year, we were asked as a General Assembly to agree a proposal for an ecumenical bishop for the Cardiff area. And we had to and fro as to whether we had agreed it, because the condition to it was that that person should be a man, because the Anglicans couldn't agree a bishop who was a woman. That within the URC, the people were not happy with that,
But based on the people based in the locality and women ministers in the area, we approved that with a two-thirds majority, saying that we were in favour of that for one appointment only. And then after that, my strong guess is that we would not be in favour of that. So if the Anglican Church doesn't quickly get its act together in terms of women bishops, the opportunities like that for ecumenical working will go down the drain. Mm.
Thank you. Thank you.
Right. My understanding was that when women's ordination came in, the provision for the flying bishops was as a temporary basis for those male priests with a conscience to opt out and use them. So why are we still ordaining deacons and priests that are able and are actually opting out and using those flying bishops as their pastoral support?
I think it's a very good question, and I agree that's wrong, and it's because of this whole notion of the two integrities, and that both are acceptable positions in the church, and I think that your notion, your understanding of what the Act of Synod was designed to do, is the right one, and that eventually the need for it should be phased out. I'm afraid we've come to the end of our time, but if you would like to buy my book. Give it a plug. Beneath the Cassock, Real Vicar of Dibley, it's in the bookshop. Thank you.
Thanks very much to Joy. If you are looking for something interesting tonight and you have your dancing shoes with you, in half an hour's time, we have a ceilidh in this tent. So come back with your friends and your dancing shoes when you've had dinner. Look forward to seeing everybody again.
At the moment, yes.
I have a really big request.
Right.
Are you likely to be using your flip-flop between now and midnight?
No.
And could I borrow it if I bring it back?
Yes, where are you?
Holy Joe's Metamorphic in Snackers.
Right, okay.
Fantastic.
Okay, Julie's coming in to follow on, so I'll tell her where it's gone.
Holy Joe's Metamorphic. She'll worry. Metamorphic. She'll worry. Yeah.